It's Monday, August 21st, 2006, and you're listening to episode 15 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 58 minutes.
So, let me see if I got this straight. You kids drove for 3-4 hours from St. Louis to Indianapolis, spent about 3 hours of a 4-day convention wandering around looking for people that you've never met, and failing that, decided to drive 3 or 4 hours all the way back. You know, I'm getting too old to yell, so I'm just going to shake my head, cluck my tongue. You kids today.
That was a audio left for us by Jim in Buffalo, and we don't normally splice those into the show, but Jim pretty
especially never Jim's audios.
Jim perfectly captured what our Gen Con experience was, and we're going to talk about that. We have some follow-up to episode 14, where we talked about our post-Gen Con experience. Mm-hmm. First, let's do the introductions. I'm Dan, and with me is Chad.
Hi.
And John.
Hey.
And Adam.
Howdy.
Is that our normal introduction order, or are you guys usually
We're
flipped?
Sitting opposite. Switch. We're sitting opposite sides because I nabbed the cushy chair today and screwed Adam with the fold-out like he usually does to me.
You also grabbed mic 3. I normally have you on mic 4, but you actually put Adam on the splotchy gray mic.
Well, today is a day of strange occurrences.
You know, you're leaving soon. I'll allow it.
All right.
All right, so somebody had a proposal for the next time we go to Gen Con. Mm-hmm. We are going to host a game.
Oh, yes, we are.
Okay, what is it we're going to host?
John's going to run it.
I am going to run it. It is going to be a monostat version, LARPed, of Shadowrun, in which the player's handbook races are restricted and utterly forbidden. Total freak show. I will give you 2 extra levels if you play a furry elemental.
Yes.
So that's right. You have to LARP a Shadowrun freak show character in our first Fear the Boot gaming convention.
I'll be running it. Come on down.
This is the most disgusting thing ever.
Before we dig into Gen Con, Chad, you wanted to plug something?
Oh, yes, yes. We mentioned this in the last podcast, but it was a little different, and it was at the end. I want to talk about the WoW Guild, the World of Warcraft Fear the Boot Guild that we have. We just got the guild up and running. We got all 10 signatures. We got a tabard. We got our vent up and running. And we have several members. People who have heard about it on the forum or heard about it on the show are now coming in over to Blackhand. And if you're interested in it, we are running on the Alliance side on the Blackhand server. Our guild
Wimp.
Name is what?
Alliance. I yeah. scoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Horn purist.
So anyway, Alliance side, Blackhand server. And it is a PvE server, and you can do a slash who of Fear the Boot.
With spaces. Fear space the space boot.
Yep. And see who's on, and send somebody a tell, and we'll get somebody to invite you. You can sign up on our forums at feartheboot.com, and we have a WoW thread, and we have a thread that you can post on. If you post your character's name, the officers will put that name into their friends list, and we'll get you an invite if we see you. Or you can send a tell to Baff Adam, or Viper is your character.
Yeah, or Busan is your character. B-U-S-O-N.
B-U-S-O-N.
So send a tell or an in-game mail or something.
Yep. And like I said, we got rules, bylaws, we got all the officers set up, and we were ready to go, and we're just ready to start getting people to trickle in.
Isn't Busan a province in Korea?
No, Busan is actually Japanese for banana.
Oh, very
interesting. It is one of the... somebody will probably correct me. I think it's the Edo era's premier haiku poet and painter.
Brilliant.
Mm, one of my favorite haiku poets. And also a name that was not taken.
I see.
Yeah, that's
always a part.
That was the important one.
Yeah, Ninja Master was gone, so Banana would have to suffice.
Pretty much.
The only reason I got names like Viper and Winterfall is because I made the characters like midnight after the game came out in November of 2004. So, yeah, now pretty much if you want a name anymore, you just have to hit your forehead on the keyboard, and what yep. you hit is what you get.
I got in with Fuente because apparently 15-year-old kids don't smoke cigars.
Or know how to speak Spanish, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Gen Con. Now, in the last yes. episode, we were on our way back from Gen Con, talking in the car, and we had sort of a grapes or sour,
right.
sour grapes kind of talk about Gen Con. And after we got back, we started talking to some of our listeners and mm-hmm. also talking with the other gaming podcasters that had been there. And we came to find out we were pretty much about 100% wrong.
Right.
That what we missed sounded like a really cool bunch of events with a really cool bunch of people at a really neat con. And sitting here, right now, I deeply regret that it did not work out better.
We really dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, if we'd heard the almost live podcast that they did in the car, I think that the last podcast would have been totally different.
It'd just been us crying.
Well, we wouldn't have left so early. We would have been hunting people down and doing much more to...
This is what happens when I leave you guys alone for a week.
Exactly.
I'd have had them like take us down to the front desk claiming that we are lost children. My daddy is Mick Bradley, which he frees page him until he comes and gets me.
Anyway, yeah. So, now, again, we're sorry about that, guys. Next year, we're going to get a hotel room. We're going to do it right. We're going to be a part of it.
We're looking at this coming year. Of course, we're still going to be at Archon here in St. Louis. Well, it's actually in Collinsville, Illinois, which is right across the river from St. Louis. We're going to still be at Archon October 5th through 8th of this year. Now, next year, we haven't got an exact list yet, but we're going back to Gen Con. Mm-hmm. We're going back to Archon, and we'll probably be going to some other cons.
Right.
But this time, we are going to plan this way in advance. We're going to have hotel room. We're going to be staying up there. We're going to have cell phone numbers so we can get a hold of other podcasters. Yep. And actually, one of the guys at All Games Considered sent me a cell phone number, but it was like that morning. It's just I didn't get it in time. So next year, we're going to do this better. We're going to do this right. And I'm hoping
we're going to bring John along, too.
That's right. I'm coming back.
Yeah, John will probably be there next time. And I'm hoping in the meantime at some of these other cons, if any of our listeners are able to come, that you can still come out, say hi. Mm-hmm. You know, and if our fellow podcasters... You know, you guys know where we're at, so if you're ever in the area, please look us up, and we'll go grab a burger or something and say hi, because I really, really regret that we missed that.
You guys, we listened to the Metacast, and we're like, wow, those guys are having a whole lot of fun, and we had a whole lot of suck.
Yeah, I listened to the Roundtable podcast, and then listened to you guys, having not gone at all, and I was like, this sounds like a lot of fun. I don't know what the hell you people did.
Hey, jerk.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard that Metacast, that's at genconlive.dragonslanding.com. Mm-hmm. So if you've not been over there to check out what our fellow podcasters did at the con while we were moping our way back to St. Louis and slamming
when
on the brakes by
to
cops.
Gen Con. This is a wasted trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, water under the bridge. Let's move on with life.
We need to do a response, a follow-up.
Ah, yes.
Here we go, the traditional Fear the Boot follow-up. Mm-hmm. On episode 13.
Yep.
In episode 13, we talked about what I sort of colloquially labeled freak show characters.
Yes, it is.
And This has put everything else to shame. Yeah. We got a huge amount of comments on the Shadowrun, on the Chad Shadowrun diatribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just me.
Chad, I'm still behind your back.
Thank you,
Chad.
You're just more articulate than I am, so I let you do the talking on that one.
He shows up more often.
And a game 10 years before I did.
That was eclipsed by the amount of feedback we got on our comments about LARPing.
Right.
Which kind of surprised me, because we actually came down generally saying we like LARPing, but I don't want to rehash
that. What I find amusing is that when I express an opinion, it somehow becomes the opinion of the podcast.
Yeah, so. It's amazing. Well, it's like you said you didn't like
on,
it.
Hold on, we'll get to that. We're getting there. You guys are going to have your chance to vent, but just hold on. So then, episode 13, we talked about freak show characters. And if you missed episode 13, go ahead and pause this, go listen to it, we'll wait for you. But as a real quick refresher,
Dawn's on it.
We were talking about characters that are something really out of the ordinary. That, for example, if you're playing D&D, you're not playing an elven archer, you're playing a dragon barkeep, or a water elemental adventurer, whatever.
Or well giant.
I think there is a dragon barkeep in the Draconomicon. As an aside, do continue, Dave.
That's thoroughly disgusting.
It is. Gross.
Well, you go take a steel wool shower. We're going to get back to this podcast. All right, so what we said was that our overall view was that we are hesitant on freak show characters for two reasons. One, that I think a lot of people gravitate to freak show characters for power reasons. They claim they really, really love hill giants, but in truth, they just want a 35 strength. Hmm. Or they claim they have a neat idea for a water elemental, but in truth, they just want the ability to slip under doors and be immune to regular weapons and things like that.
Drowned kobolds in their body.
Yeah. The second hesitation we have, or at least I have, is that with Freak Show characters, a lot of times people use the glitter as an excuse to not do depth. Mm. That while everyone else is trying to work out complex personalities and original backgrounds, this guy's character sheet is, I am a gnoll. And that's it. Well, yeah. What's interesting about your character? Well, he's a gnoll. What does he do?
And he does gnoll things.
He does gnoll things. He eats people and growls a lot. And he's furry and can't go into towns because the townspeople hate him.
Small adventurers kill him, but his halberd's always too rusty to take.
Now, having said that, we also clarified that we have had in our campaigns Freak Show characters. And we generally don't have a problem with them. We're just very, very hesitant because we think you could have good Freak Show characters.
Right.
But people tend to not bother to make good Freak Show characters. So if someone comes to me in a game and says, I want to play a dragon barkeep, I would not disallow it. But
I would say no, sir, flat out.
See, I would not. I would not disallow. But it'd be like, you've got a hard sell. Prove to me this is a good idea.
The Mount Everest of sells.
Well, see, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, I would.
All right, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Moving forward without rehashing episode 13.
Yes.
After we said that, we started getting a whole bunch of emails, message board posts, even commentary on other podcasts. Let's use this as an example, Bears Grove by Sam. Sam over on Bears Grove.
What's the website for that?
I think bearsgrove.com. Bearsgrove.com. I think. But just do a search on Bears Grove, Sam, and you'll find him. He's on his started off, and this, I'm going to use Sam's as an example, but this is pretty archetypical of the response we got. Sam started off by saying, you know, the discussion got me thinking, and I don't know if I agree with him, and he started going through this list of Freak Show characters he's had in his games that were, and I'll have to say after listening to it, were really good, yeah, interesting characters.
Yeah, he put a lot of detail into them.
And they were neat characters, so good job on that, Sam. Mm-hmm. The Freak Show characters you came up with, we'd have no problems in our campaign. What we're saying is not that Freak Show characters are bad. We're not saying that if you've ever played anything weird, the character's automatically garbage.
Yeah.
That's not what we said in episode 13, and I'm not clear how that image popped up.
Right.
What we said is that they are a dangerous idea because people tend to do them for power or for glitter rather than making good characters. And I would rather see someone play a deep, exciting,
right,
expressive human secretary than a dragon knight whose character description ends at dragon knight.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, too, were saying that we only had our one opinion, and that one opinion was the we're looking at as the right opinion. And I really have to strongly disagree with that. We had, for the Freak Show game, we had three hosts, me, you, and Dawn, and we generally had three different opinions.
Yeah.
You were against Freak Show characters, but, you know, if you could sell the idea and it was good, it,
right,
was fine. I was more, a little bit more in favor of them, and all the, like, 90% of the examples we were giving of bad Freak Show characters were my old characters from old right, games we used to run. And then Dawn was sitting there, and she was the one who was running the dragon. So I don't see where that was coming from, that we only have the one vision.
Right.
I think on this show, we have, you know, four people sitting here right now. This is four different viewpoints. We pick a topic, and we discuss it and debate it from our different viewpoints. And because, say, Adam has a viewpoint that's totally opposite of mine, because I respect his viewpoint and I listen to it, doesn't necessarily mean I agree with it, and then I express a differing viewpoint, and because he doesn't vehemently disagree with me, but he listens to me and respects my viewpoints, again, it doesn't mean that we're selling out views or trying to come to one consensus. It's, we are trying to explore all the different aspects of one topic.
Right, and that's something I can't stress enough, is that this is a roundtable discussion,
right,
show, and because of that, first of all, it's highly editorial. We're going to come here with a lot of opinions, and secondly, as Chad said, there are four people here over the course of the show. We've had probably 8 or 10 people sit behind these mics. So probably closer to 10, maybe even 12.
But, math guy?
Well, we'll count that out later. It's kind of a huge tangent.
Not math.
But we've had a whole lot of different people sit behind these mics that have radically different opinions. If, you know, and I think that what happens, and maybe this is our own fault, that we'll be talking and I'll say, oh, you know, blah, 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 the color red. Mm-hmm. And Chad will say, color red sucks. And we just move on. And so people assume that's our opinion. Well, no, that's Chad's opinion.
Yeah. Chad at feartheboot.com.
Yeah. When this happened in our
Master,
very...
I like red.
In our first couple shows, this happened where I made some comment about Shadowrun, and Chad's like, oh, hideous, heinous Shadowrun. I hate Shadowrun.
Yeah, because,
well,
it's terrible.
Well, the fact is, I love Shadowrun.
Mm-hmm.
Shadowrun is one of my preferred games.
And for that, you're wrong.
Thank you, John.
But no problem.
United.
Well, Dan, but Chad, I still never played it.
Chad made this comment in passing about how he hates Shadowrun, and suddenly I'm having to field emails from irate Shadowrun players wanting to know why I hate the game. It's like, I don't hate the game.
But you know what? I like that. I like the
what,
fact
that I'm fueling
you like
your
hiding
hate
behind the tan when you hate something?
I've been doing that for years. But aside from that, I like the fact that we get people thinking. That we express opinions that people feel strongly about, strong enough to write into us. And nobody is writing into us and saying, you jackasses, bastards, blah, 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 beep, beep, beep. No, it's all well-reasoned arguments, and it's all in good fun.
Yeah, let me clarify that real quick. What I'm being somewhat flippant here, but truth be told, in our entire history of this show, we have gotten a lot of feedback. Mm-hmm. Only one person's feedback has been outright ignorant. We've had a lot of people disagree with us, but you guys that write in or
this
post saying you disagree,
community.
We appreciate it because your feedback, we like that we're starting discussions, and a lot of the feedback we get, even if you disagree with us, is well thought out, and we see where you're coming from.
Keep that feedback coming. So challenge us.
Yeah, this
you know?
Is. We are not going off on people who disagree with us. Don't hear that at all.
Right.
You guys have been really good, so when I talk about hate mail, I'm being somewhat you know, flippant,
like
comedic here, so don't take that too seriously.
Yeah. Really, I love the feedback we get on the forums. I love the feedback we get on the email. It gives us something to talk about. For one, that's pretty much why we're here. And I like the fact that we're making people think, that we're making people talk about these things. And other podcasts are talking about how we are giving them topics to talk about. Because we'll talk about something on our show they'll disagree with, and they'll talk about it on their show. And they'll talk about something on their show, and we'll listen to it and talk about it on our show, too. And I it's this really neat interplay and exchange of ideas. So keep them coming. Tell us we're wrong. We'll debate you.
Tell Chad he's wrong.
I want to respond to one other thing, that because in this show it is editorial, and once every so often our opinions really do align on something. And some people said that when we do that, we come across as if, I think the phrase was one true wayism.
Yeah.
That like we're saying there's only one true way to game, and if you game another way, that's nice. We just pat you on the head and let you have your fun. That's not our attitude. We have an opinion, okay? Mm-hmm. If we were out, if I had everyone listening to this podcast sitting in a great big room, and I pointed to you, okay, you, that one listener, and said, pick out a movie you really like for us to watch, and you pick something out, this may be your favorite movie in the world, but there are people in there that are going to hate the movie, and they're going to hate it because it doesn't conform to their standards. There's nothing wrong with that. And similarly, when we sit around these mics, guess what? There are styles of gaming we can't stand. But we recognize that our opinion is not the end-all be-all. One of our listeners put it very well. He said that Fear the Boot stance is there's no such thing as bad fun.
Right.
And that is our stance. That if you want to play a game where everyone is a super shallow character and there's no depth and nothing going on, you're just working from
Aboleth the zombie.
Yeah, Eric Okrad a zombie through the Monster Manual.
But I have a World of Warcraft subscription.
You guys are having a great time. We really don't look down on you for that. It's just in an editorial show, we are here to tell you what it is we like and offer you advice for creating games that, in our opinion, are good. And if that comes off as elitism, then, you know, maybe we need to look at the way we're communicating ourselves. But I would like to say that from a personal standpoint, that's not what we're trying to get at.
We're gaming snobs. Get over
it. We are for ourselves. Just as there's people out there, you're sitting by home or at home by yourself. You're not going to watch a movie you hate.
Right.
And similarly, we're not going to game a game we don't like. That doesn't mean you're an idiot for gaming that way. If you want to LARP Vampire and get ejected from Denny's just because we make stupid jokes like that, doesn't mean we think, therefore, you're an idiot that should be drug off to jail and executed. And similarly, if you want
to... But we do think you should get ejected from Denny's because we're trying to enjoy a hamburger.
Now, once again, that's Chad's opinion. That was not a show opinion.
Well, I think you shouldn't be LARPing in the first place.
That's
Adam's
opinion.
There you go.
So you guys can write hate mail to them.
I wouldn't mind LARPing a bit. I wouldn't mind giving it a try.
Well, yeah, see, that's one of the things that kind of I didn't understand with the LARPing thing is I realized in early episodes we made the mistake of just snapping at LARPers, and we never explained it.
Yeah.
But when we went back and explained it and said, look, we've written a couple games in-house that are our favorite games, and one of those games we only play by LARP.
Yep.
I think it's really hard to walk away from that with the opinion that all the show's hosts unanimously hate LARPers and LARPing when that's what we're doing, writing games to do.
My favorite game ever is our game that we wrote, well, big ego thing there, but the game that we wrote, which is a post-nuclear live-action role-playing game. I love it. I mean, I don't want to get it. I don't want to. That would be a whole show just to explain gaming products, and we'll do that later. Yeah, this show isn't anti-LARP. It isn't pro-LARP either.
It isn't pro or anti anything beyond good gaming and bad gaming.
I think that we could go on and on like this, but yeah, I don't think people want to hear.
I agree. Let's chop this off. I'm out of this topic already.
I don't want to drag this on forever for sake of those of you that just aren't interested in the external controversies, but I just want to make the point here that we don't take our opinions too seriously, and you guys shouldn't either.
Right.
So, you know, we're just...
No, my word is law.
This is how we have fun, and if you don't, there's nothing wrong with that. So just to wrap this up real quick so we can move on, I want to make clear that we're not mad. This was not a defensive retort to you guys. You know, as I said before, we appreciate your feedback. We love you guys. We love the stuff you say about our show, even when you disagree with us. We just wanted a chance to clarify exactly what the show is about and what our views are, not because we're trying to jump into a brawl with you guys at all, but just because we want to make sure that everyone understands what it is we're all about, just so you kind of, you know how to interpret the way we're behaving. So there you go. There you have it. Let's roll on from that into some advice topics. For the advice portion of the show today, we're going to talk about two related subjects, which is players that aren't there. And we're going to talk about this from two angles. Angle number one.
That's only one subject.
Well, no, it's a subject with two aspects.
Okay.
Two very different aspects.
Go back to sleep over there.
Aspect number one is you have a real, normal, regular game around a table, and there's players that don't show up. Okay. Mm-hmm. Aspect number two is a game where none of the players are present, meaning you have like a game over the web, through email, via forum, over the phone.
Some alternative method of communication.
Yeah, some alternative method, but in both situations, you have something going on where a player is not present. So let's talk about aspect number one. You have a game, four players and a GM, game comes up, and a player doesn't show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Obviously, that causes several problems. First of all, if they were tightly drawn into the plot, this was all about their background, their father's revenge, whatever, they're not there. So suddenly you have lost the emotional context of the game. Way number two is purely mechanical, that you had fights geared to a certain difficulty, they're not there, or you had a puzzle or a challenge that was require a particular set of skills, they're not there. For example, for our upcoming game, we've been thinking about doing Star Trek. If I run Star Trek, Carla will want to play, but she's going to be gone the first couple weeks. She would probably want to be the science officer. Well, it's really hard to get through a Star Trek game if you're doing that kind of exploration and mystery and such without your science officer around to intuit any of the things you're seeing.
Right.
Group dynamic is thrown off.
That's where I was going to, too. Not even mechanically, but just the balance of the role play. We've been in a lot of situations, our group, the castle game especially comes to mind, in which every character has a relationship with every other character. Well, to take one pin out of that apparatus would seriously damage it.
Oh, actually, even in our last D&D game, you get a situation where A loves B, and C loves B, but A hates C. And you take B out of the picture.
Exactly. It's exactly what I'm talking about. You put it perfectly.
All right, so let's talk about ways to resolve these.
Well, one way I would say it depends. Is the person who isn't showing up, say you have A, B, C, and D, and D didn't make it that day. Everybody shows up all the time, and this is just like their mother's in the hospital, so this is just like a one-time thing. No big deal. What I would recommend doing, it's like, what we do, it's wing night. Somebody can't make it, and everybody generally can make it to our games.
Right.
Or a certain number of people can't make it, and we can't run a game. It's like, hell, we just go down to the bar and get some wings and beer.
Yeah, a couple years ago, we had that month of bowling. You guys remember that?
Yeah, that was awesome. We stopped gaming and we just bowled for an entire month.
Some people may have trouble doing that because I actually got, for example, an email from a guy who talks about he and his group, I think he said games only like a couple times a year.
Right.
But when they do, they have, here's the thing, though. When they do, because we were talking about the gaming environment. We talked about gaming in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that what they do is they rent out a hotel room and they game literally for days.
Right.
Like just mega marathon game where they barely even sleep. They just sit there and game all the time.
That's hardcore.
That is hardcore.
My initial reaction is a downturn of my mouth. But now that I'm thinking about it, that actually sounds kind of cool.
It sounds a lot of fun if you can find a GM who has the stamina.
The only reason I frown at it is because I'm jealous. So I have to think it's something terrible.
This sounds like an adventure for us boys.
Because we used to do that when we were acting like college.
It sounds like the gauntlet has been laid.
I think it does.
Okay, I wonder if there's a record in the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest
game
unbroken
Dungeons
RPG.
And Dragons Jeez. Run.
You know, if there's anyone out there who wants to do this, this would be a great publicity stunt for our morning show Zany podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, anyway.
Temple of Elemental Evil, go.
But my point being, I agree with you that
Greyhawk.
If you just can't get everyone there, call off the game.
Right.
But some people may not be able to do that either because, like this guy, they don't game that often.
Yeah. And, or, you know, I think you could even do it.
You just miss too many weeks.
Yeah.
You've got too many weeks off. If you just don't game, the game dies.
Right.
So you've got a game somewhere in there.
I think that just calling the game off straight up is kind of a drastic maneuver.
Yeah,
I think you need to be
very drastic.
Really realistic about the level of importance. I mean, let's just call it what it is.
Right.
The level of importance of that person.
Mm-hmm.
Is that person a periphery guy? Or is that person a main character?
Right.
You can go without a red shirt. You can't go without the captain.
Okay. Yeah,
exactly.
Let's work through these possibilities. We came up with as I was jotting out notes here, we came up with looks like three problems when a player is not there. Let's kill them one at a time.
Kill the players one at a time.
Problem number one.
But then they will never show up.
Their background is too important to the plot. Okay. And maybe it's not the plot as a whole, because if the plot as a whole hinges on one character, you've written a bad plot. But let's just say that this one particular section of the campaign, that when we left off last time, so-and-so's father, who we thought was dead, bursts into the room and tells us, you've got to come home. Your mother's dying, this, that, and the other. Oh, that's great. Last minute, that guy calls and says, I can't make it next time. So when you pick the game up, everyone is sitting in the room with this guy's father here,
waiting.
Chair is now empty.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in that situation, that guy is 100% necessary to the plot.
It's bowling night.
All right, but let's say that's not an option. Let's say
once a month,
yeah.
Once every 2 months, and
maybe
you have to
game. Even if you could call off the game, you don't want to because you don't game often.
Right.
So you don't want to miss this. What are some things you need to get around that?
The two ways I see is you could either fudge it. The game master says, well, this, and this happens, and you move beyond the scene with the narration.
Right.
Or you do a puppet master, where the game master takes over that guy's character, turns him into an NPC, and
I would move away from that latter option. In this one case, for one reason, if it's that important to the character's development, yeah,
right.
You can puppet the character, but you can't develop the character.
Right. Oh, I don't think it's a necessarily good. It's one of those lesser of evils things.
So I would do something different. I would just ice the plot point.
You know what? I'm with you. That's exactly where I was going
to
go.
I would bring the players in and say, look, guys, game master to players, not world to PCs, game master players, you just got to understand, Bill's not going to be here. If Bill's not here, we can't do this plot point. So what I'm going to do is his father's going to tell you this, but we're going to move the plot such that it's going to take a while to prepare that caravan to go back home, or there's a big flood in the area that's going to make you wait, and we're going to do some things in the town until next time.
And as a game master, you have to be very careful, too. What is this extra stuff that you're doing? It's called fluff.
Hey,
fluff.
You know what? Well, it's all about the diversion. Depending on your skills as a game master, can you insert a clever diversion in there?
The father bursts
in, and then more men burst in with the father.
And drag the father off to jail.
Well, see, you know what? That's fluff, but that's good fluff.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, how clever can you insert
exactly.
that?
Yeah, there really is no fluff, I don't think.
If it's good misdirection, there's no fluff.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with a subplot as long as it's a good one. So, yeah, you have the father.
Let's talk about it real quick. What would be a bad subplot that would turn into fluff? What should people avoid?
Well, I got to say first, that's a great plot point that people break in, drag the father off to jail.
Yeah, everybody's the tension level's so high.
The father bursts in and then falls over into a coma.
Yeah.
And then we all kind of sit around.
Well, I think the father's in there, he's about to do the big reveal, and everybody's on the seat of their pants, and all of a sudden somebody bursts in and says, the orphanage got flooded! And the father's like, well, I'll have to wait to tell you guys, let's go save the children!
Yeah, that sucks.
That's fluff.
Okay.
That sounds very cheesy,
yeah.
I would think, if I had to try and describe what bad fluff is, I'd say it's one of two things. One, something that is so I think it's got to be both of these.
Mm-hmm.
One, it has to be super inorganic to the plot. Like I said, like for no particular reason, the orphanage burns down. What I'm reminded of is in a lot of like Final Fantasy games and such, you hit that final plot point, you're about to go fight the great wizard who's about to destroy the world, yet you spend the next 20 hours of game time jacking around, raising chocobos, getting ultimate weapons. All I'm going to get you. 30 seconds, it's going to hit. Okay, I'll be back in 2 months. And it just destroys immersion. The
right.
second thing, and I think what's it's got to be both of these, it's just got to be bad.
Yeah.
I think the same thing that makes bad fluff makes bad games in general. That it's a boring plot point, crappy characters, whatever. But I think if you can create anything that is relatively organic to the plot, fits in there pretty well, and is well executed, mm-hmm. it's great. It's perfect.
Yeah. And a good resource would be your own notes. You have the cool things happening like two or three gaming sessions down the road. Take those Ooh. Things and move them up. Guess what?
A little foreshadowing,
the
yeah.
The players don't know. The players don't know this was supposed to happen 2 weeks now. You do a little bit of rearranging, and then in the off time when the game's over, you kind of look at the disaster that you just made of your own notes, and you make some rearrangements, and you carry
yeah,
on.
That's the beauty of a campaign outline, which we talked about yeah. many shows ago. All right, let's take the next one. This one's a little easier to deal with. Character is not there. Player's not there.
Mm-hmm.
This character had a critical skill or was critical to the balance of combat. That you have a combat plan, and this is a guy who actually carries around the big minigun and the powered armor and whatever. Yeah. Which, all right, so let's say you had someone's critical yeah. to critical to group balance mechanically, not, not personality-wise.
Star Trek Bridge, this is the helmsman.
Yes.
Well, if it's just a character sheet, the DM can do it.
In that case, it's like, if it's no development, and it moves the plot along. I think you can do NPC puppeting, or I'm sorry, you can do GM puppeting, or you can put in an NPC.
I agree. I think you can either puppet the character or exactly NPC, yeah. a hireling, and this is a different shift, so different guy's on the bridge, or he's sick. Just don't dig into it. Just get him out of the picture.
We used to have a term for it. We used to call it cardboard cutouts. It's
yeah.
like when a player couldn't be there, but we didn't want to remove them from the game for no reason. They were still there. They were in the back. They just didn't say anything. They just didn't do anything. They were a cardboard cutout. They stood there
yeah.
when the group was doing things, and their arm was kind of waving.
And all they could do was roll dice.
Yeah.
It's like...
they could never die, and they could roll dice.
You don't role play with Alex over here. He just follows you around, mm-hmm. and when
he agrees with everything
yeah,
you
the
say.
Benefit of being Alex is that he's immortal for that period of cardboard cutout.
We're going to get to that. That's this one we're going to get to. Should he be immortal? When it comes time that he's the helmsman and you got to fly, he can drop dice to move the ship. And that's
oh
all
my.
He can do. All right, that's an easy one. Number three, this is, in my mind, I think this is the hardest of the three. Group dynamics. You have three guys in a party. I'll just give them ABC names. You have Al, Bob, and...
Charlie.
Chad was the only name that was coming to mind.
That's a horrible, horrible name.
So,
thank you.
You have Al, Bob, and Charlie. And Al's character likes Bob's character. Charlie's character likes Bob's character.
Like in what way?
Ooh. But Al and Charlie's character cannot stand each other. Bob can't make the game.
A jealous gay love triangle. I don't think I've ever played
You're taking
game
this to
this.
A whole new level. It did not need to
hey
be
Hey, man,
that.
I'm just following along with the game.
Chad, I think
here.
All the jealousy and gayness is on your end of the microphone.
Oh, maybe.
The first year the food gay joke.
It wasn't
even a joke.
Yeah, in case this podcast was not juvenile enough for anyone after bonus episode 6, we're going to fix that right up for you. But let's say you've got all kinds of tension between the characters that can't be resolved without the middleman there. In fact, we had this exact issue going on in our most recent D&D campaign where everyone liked Adam's character. And separate from Adam's character, the characters either could not stand each other or had no specific reason to be together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Adam never missed a game, but let's say he had missed a game. You suddenly have a party that doesn't even want to be together anymore. And if people are really hardcore role-playing it, how do you deal with that?
Like I said earlier, you could puppet them, but...
That's not going to fix group dynamics.
That's not going to fix group dynamic, and that's going to be cheesy, but it will work.
Well,
it will get them going. Not going well, but it'll lead them down the path.
I could take this in another direction. How hardcore are you going to role-play to the point of group dysfunction or not?
Right.
But... I think that's another topic altogether.
I think what I would start with is the players. I'd say, look, I realize you guys were only getting along because of Bob's character. Bob's not here. You guys can bicker and we have no game. Or you can fudge your characters, pretend you like each other for this one game. You know, and just fudge your characters enough to get us through this game.
Yeah, you don't have to like, you don't have to love each other. You just have to not kill
yeah.
each other.
You just have to go over there.
As a group.
There is always impending circumstance. I mean, maybe you didn't want to bring the fire arrows down on the castle, but that will get otherwise ambivalent people to stop fighting and face an external threat.
Are you talking about inserting some sort of subplot?
I'm talking about bringing in an outside threat that will
external pressure.
unite people. Like, you and I aren't going to go into combat with each other anytime
soon.
But if there's combat and we're right next to each other,
if someone knocks down that wall, if the Kool-Aid guy comes bursting through, we're going to get up and tackle his butt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How many hit dice would the Kool-Aid man have?
Oh, at least 8. He's got to have ogre stats plus.
So.
Yeah, but it's thick glass.
Yeah, it is. Oh, I don't deny that.
Well, if you can bust through brick walls. Yeah, I mean,
that's not even a scratch on him.
I would indeed say that is hella glass.
You know what? He could grab you and he could dunk you inside of himself and drown you.
You know what? Not only is he a glass jar with arms and legs, but he is holding an additional glass jar as a one-handed weapon.
You know
he
what?
Can summon his own
face.
Kin like
that's
the Batazoo can in hell.
You know what? Awesome. This is what the D20 system was made for. Somebody needs to make a D20 Kool-Aid man
Kool-Aid
setting.
The Kool-Aid guy is going to be the villain in the LARP of Shadowrun.
Awesome.
I may or may not do this when I get home today.
Okay. So
basically an external threat
pressure.
To draw them.
That, yeah, you're not getting along, so fine. This guy's going to kill you both, whether you get along or not.
And not to go into a gaming story, but we've had a game where I've added the external pressure to try and get people to get along.
And it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
And that's why I think,
it was awesome.
I think my first stop would be real time with the players. Say, look, Al's like, well, I'm playing a dwarf and I hate his elf. And Charlie's like, I'm playing an elf and I hate his dwarf. Sit down and say, look, guys, you can
it's
do one of two things.
Charlie.
You can bicker, you can hate each other, and we can go bowling. Or you can fudge your characters a little bit and we can still have a game. And if you get someone who's just so diehard about it, they won't fudge the character. I guess you got no choice. You go bowling.
You go bowling. You get some beer and go bowling. And you know what? That's not a bad option.
Because part of the problem is you let that go. When it starts off, I mean, they may be repelling forces. But if you let that go, by the time it ends, they could be in separate cities and hate each other even more. Oh. And your campaign is now dead.
As a game master, let me tell you guys, the one thing that I hate is people going to different places. You have 5 people. They go to 5 different places in a castle. One goes to the tavern. One goes to the armory. One goes to the watchtower. One goes to the wall.
Group template problem.
One goes jumps in the moat. But guess what? There's only one damn plot.
Well, I gotta say, in general, and this is true here as well, 90% of your game problems, in my mind, begin in one of two places. The group template or the campaign you wrote. 90% of your problems come from there. And even problems you think, well, the problem is this guy's a disruptive player. I don't know what they're going to do or this, that, and the other. Once again, group template and campaign setting would have fixed it.
You know, I thought you were talking to Chad. I was like, wow, this is getting heavy. I was waiting for this conversation to come up, but then you were talking with the general you.
No. Because like in here, we're talking about the group dynamic problem.
I was like, what group template?
I'd say the problem here to begin with is Al and Charlie's character should have their own reasons to be together.
Right.
They should not be through Bob.
Yeah, again, and you've always said this too, it shouldn't be a Pollyanna game. They don't have to like each other, but they should have reason enough to walk side by side down the same road together to the plot.
Right.
Yeah, I know. In future games that I run, I'm thinking about requiring that.
Yep. Oh, big
you
time.
You cannot play in my game unless you are on good speaking terms with everyone in the group.
You don't have to like them. But
good
yeah.
speaking terms, yep. and you will generally go with the group on most of them.
Good luck getting your wife to sign that agreement.
Well, we'll see. I'll just have to smack her around a bit.
All right, she will beat your ass.
Let's talk about what you do with a missing player. I've got a couple possibilities here. Let's kick them all around. Possibility 1, guy doesn't show up to the game. You leave his character completely out.
Right.
You just—he's not there. We don't talk about why he's not there. He just isn't.
He's a cardboard
sick.
Cutout.
He's missing. He's going home to see his dear old mom. He's just not there.
Oh, he's just
no, not cardboard
gone.
Cutout.
Oh, no, he just left.
He's gone. And we've done this. We've role played. It's just we don't talk about so and so. He's still on the ship. He's back at the end.
Well, you know? I mean, when you're role playing a game, these people still have lives. I mean, they do things that are not fantastic, like this guy's taking care of his job. I mean,
right.
You have a job.
No, my profession is killing dragons. What about your family? Dragons killed my family.
And story-wise, I think it's very believable. Your downside is anything this person offered to balance of skills or things like that is now completely lost. But
with a DM, you can screw around with that. If you needed open locks and there was a locked door at the end, change it to a beam and someone has balance and they can walk across it because that guy is actually at the game today.
Okay, possibility 2. You leave him in, but you make him a cardboard cutout.
Mm-hmm.
This is my preferred way of doing things.
This is how we generally do
They don't
do
role play.
It.
They don't do anything. They just, when you come to a skill that only they have, they can still roll dice.
Somebody grabs them when the shooting starts, uses them as a shield because the Game Master can't kill them because it's not fair.
Hold on. Hold that thought. That's next topic. Bear with me. All right, wait number
three. Are there any traps down this hall? Joe's not here. Send him down.
Wait number three, and I hate doing this, but some people may do it, is the Game Master RPs the character. You NPC the character.
And I don't like doing game,
that,
but,
I don't like doing that for the simple reason, we've said before, as a Game Master, you control the whole world. All that player has is that one character. Mm-hmm. And even when they're not there, if you take that over, they now have to deal with, when they get back, they have to deal with the RP ramifications of things they said and they did that, in their mind, they would have never done or said.
Yeah, that's a dangerous path to go down.
So right. I think that's... I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying do it with the utmost care.
That creates too much potential for player alienation.
Yeah. Also, it creates boredom for other players, too, because it's like...
Yeah, the Game Master's role-playing with himself.
Yeah. It's like the Game Master, you know, he looks to the right and says, blah, blah, blah. And then he looks to the left and he takes on the persona of the other player and he's like, blah, blah, blah. And this goes on for 5 minutes. And the other players just watch the Game Master talk to himself.
It worked in Lord of the Rings. It was funny.
Sorry. What?
Wait, what?
Smeagol and Gollumer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And a role-playing podcast. No one got that joke.
If you have professional actors and that kind of budget, you can do that in your games. Otherwise, we don't recommend it.
Only if you have Andy Serkis and Industrial Light and Magic or whoever did the effects can you do that.
Is a Weta or...
Yeah,
Weta.
Peter Jackson's own in-house thing.
So what do you do when they come back? Let me explain what I'm asking about.
Just shoot them in the head.
Not the character.
When they come back, should you give the person... Let's say you're playing a game that has advancement points of some kind. Right. Okay? D&D, for example.
Disgusting.
Easiest. See, and now...
Brilliant.
Why do you... All you guys hate D&D. The Fear of the Boot guys hate D&D. Blah, blah, blah. We're going to be 20 emails of this. Chad said disgusting. I don't even know why he said disgusting.
And then I'm going to have to sit and...
He could have been playing with his belly button.
First half of another episode where you backtrack and say, explain. This isn't what we're saying. You took us out of context. Ah.
I love D&D with every fiber of my little black heart.
You know what, John? The anti-D&D people are going to bitch at you now.
Yeah, I know. But as much as I love it and would like to pontificate on it, I demand to hear what Dan was starting to say.
Thank you.
So if you would.
See, disgusting. This is the problem. It's Chad's drive-by adjectives. This is what ruins the show.
That's right.
All right.
You should see me in real life.
So let's say they're not there. They show up the next time. Should you give them XP? Here's the arguments on both sides. If you do give them XP, is it really fair? They weren't there. They didn't do anything. They didn't take any risks. If you don't give them XP, they could be falling behind the party, which in the long run could cause a real problem in the game. I tend towards don't give them XP. And the reason I say that is because I don't...
They should have shown up.
Exactly.
Who cares if their mom had a heart attack?
I was there.
I recognize real life comes first, always.
This is the birth of my child. You should have been there.
Yeah, you lost out on 800 XP, jerk.
I realize that real life comes first, always. But part of the problem I've seen is that if there's absolutely no loss for not being there, sometimes you get players just don't make it a priority.
Right.
That they will schedule anything on game night. And so you kind of got to not be a jackass to them, because like I said, real life comes first, period. Mm. This is just a game. But you've got to give them some sense that if they don't show up, they lose something. So maybe they'll kind of try a little bit to schedule around it. What do you guys think? Agree, disagree?
Well, I think if they're just not showing up, that's a different problem.
I have a whole different opinion on character advancement than most people
huge
do.
Huge different
kind. That's a totally different cast.
All right, you're running a D&D game that
and
has
then I'm
XP.
Giving experience.
You're
giving
XP
levels.
For whatever reason.
No, I don't think I would, because, we were joking here just a minute ago, birth of child, 800, it's just 800 XP, you know, it's just one game's worth. And you know what? If the player wants to come to me later and says, hey dude, I want to make this up somehow. And I'm like, okay, I tell you what, I'll work a little something extra in for you for the next game. And then, you show me what you got, and we'll talk. And you know what? It can be made up easier, and you can get the player to jump through hoops for you.
I disagree. I submit that the character earns the XP and not the player. Now, Dan, what you said was a valid point. If you needed a sort of shepherd's crook, and you thought that hitting them with the XP sheet would get them to come, go ahead and do it. Now, faulty attendance is probably indicative of deeper problems than just XP mongering, as you said, Adam.
Well, I agree, but sometimes there's... resolving those creates more drama than it solves.
It can,
so.
Yeah.
Won't get into that, but you know what I'm talking about.
Anyway, I disagree from the rest of you and say that the character killed the orcs. Give it the XP. Don't let it fall behind.
Hey, jerk. Well, I haven't said my opinion yet. You disagreed with me.
Not yet. Go ahead, Adam.
Okay. The last part. We talked about three different ways to solve it.
Right.
Which one?
A good point. And I was operating under the presumption I typically cardboard the character. So in my case, to respond to John's point, the character would not have killed any orcs. Right. The character may have picked the lock to the orc camp, but then he just disappears into the background.
Then I would say no XP on your point. But if you're going to use him in combat, and there's, well, we're going to get into the potential ramifications of that.
Right, yeah, that's the next point.
And that is also going to feed into my answer. But well, you get where I'm going with that.
Also, yeah. I believe, too, that experience, even in D&D or anything like that, if you're going to give out experience points and levels, the weight of it should be for role-playing.
I agree
with
you.
I agree with that.
If you're going to cardboard a character, puppet them, or bamf them out, whether they're there hacking away at orcs and risking their character or not, they weren't role-playing.
I agree with John's commentary, though, that I think the reward system in most RPGs of any kind is largely a risk and reward thing.
Right.
Where if I am taking a player and I'm not cardboarding them, I'm putting them in combat, the understanding is there, they could get hurt, they could die. And that's what I want to talk, one of the things I want to talk about next is should you be allowed to do that?
Yeah, I'll answer
but
the question
if we take that standpoint, then yes, I would say they get the XP, they get their cut of the dragon's treasure, they get all that stuff because that character was risked. But since I cardboard them, no, I typically don't reward them because they took no risk. They were immortal for that game. You could not kill them. Mm. I mean, you could destroy the universe and that one cardboard cutout is still standing
in
there.
Space. As soon as he gets back, he implodes.
Yeah. I did not assume that in my response, and I agree. If you're invulnerable, you don't get nothing.
Yeah, I'm going more down that road as well.
I want to reward role-playing, so I want to see you role-play.
I can't disagree with where you're coming
when
from.
When we talk about this next point, I'll clarify my position.
Okay.
All right, so talking about this next point, should the person be able to be hurt?
If you're going to give them XP, then yes. If not, then no.
I say no, because they're not there. Again, you have, as a GM, you have everything. You have the universe, right. All the NPCs. This guy has one thing. His mother had a heart attack. He comes back the next week,
and you hand
him a character sheet that is ripped in half and hand to him, said, roll up a new character, your character died.
Yeah.
I would leave the game.
Yeah, I would
too. That's a discussion you need to have. Listen.
I agree. I'd be outraged. The only fighter we have, maybe
using you in combat, the guy's like, listen, I understand that my sheet balances out a lot of the characters in the game. Mm. Go ahead and just use me in combat.
See, but in my case, I would still consider that. It's a different kind of role, but still a cardboard cutout role. And I'd put the guy in combat, and it's like he can go down to zero hit points and be knocked unconscious.
Yeah, D&D allows
that. He can't die, and he's not going to do anything all that spectacular. But I agree with Chad that if I came back to a game, and all I have in the world is this one character, and the GM took my character, ran him in a way, even if it's just on the nuance level, I would not have done that. Yeah, I might have done things like that, but not how he did it. And because of the GM's dice roll and because of this, that, and the other, my character is now dead out of my control. Yeah. I'd be pissed.
Or even massively changed, like maimed, no arm.
And how about I roll into the next part? What if another player plays it?
Same thing.
Just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah,
it depends.
I don't know about that.
Well, I agree with Adam with reservations on this one. If the game master handed the other player the sheet and said, here, play Bob, then Bob better not die, better not get an arm cut off, better not lose an eye. Now, if I called up and I called Adam up and I'm like, and Dan's around the game, like, Adam, I can't make it. We need my character for X, Y, and Z reasons because I think he's really important.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, run my character.
Or you give it to the group.
Yeah.
And like everybody else on the is like, hey, listen.
I trust Adam enough or trust the group enough. If I come back and my character's dead and they're like, hey, dude, X, Y, and Z happened. I'm really sorry. I'd be like, that's the way the cookie crumbles, man. That's fine.
Right.
If the party got wiped out, I wouldn't have a problem. We dead. On to the next thing.
Somebody threw a grenade, so we threw your character on top of it.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm going with that. If I am dead and I didn't deliberately do it to myself or it didn't come as a result of my own choices, I'm getting miffed and I'm leaving the game.
Right.
So don't kill me.
Let's do this on a closeout vote. All right, let's say that you're running a game. Let's say D&D, keep it easy. What would you do? Guy's gone. I would still stand
by. As a game master,
yes,
someone running the game?
I would cardboard cut him. I would cardboard cut out him. Only use them for very minimal things. I would not give them XP. I would let the players decide whether they want to split treasure with them. That's their choice. Mm. That's an IC choice, in-character choice, not a game master choice. would not give him XP, but on the flip side, he would suffer nothing. He would not be hurt. He would not be robbed. He'd come back in perfect shape. Chad, how would you do it?
Pretty much the same way you do it. I would sign one player to fill him in on what happened because I don't want to do it.
This always ends up being me.
Okay.
It does.
John?
What? Yep, I would cardboard cut him, but for the sake of group balance, I would even give him the XP. So I'd be a little more generous.
Okay, so
than you
same
are,
thing
Dan.
We would do, but XP. What about money? I said let the players decide.
Agreed. Okay. They got the loot. They decide by their internal processes. They're all there, and they come to the agreement that one person gets everything. That's fine too. Their responsibility. That's one of the few shreds of ownership in the world I'll give them as a GM.
I agree.
Adam? I'd ask what the dude wants me to do with this character.
You'd let him decide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's ultimately going to be his choice. You gain nothing, but you can't be hurt, or you can gain things, but you could die.
But you would hold the risk for reward line.
Yeah, that's
that if
exactly
you want
right
a reward, right. You have to take the risk.
All right.
Since we're kind of running out of time, let's hold dealing long distance gaming for next time for episode. I guess it's 17.
Yeah.
Something. No, 15.
Promises,
I don't know.
Promises.
Whatever the next episode is, and let's instead talk about kind of the reverse of absentee players. Let's talk about if you have a mature, well-established game. Okay, you've got a game you've been running for months or years, and you want to bring a new character into it. Maybe a new player, or maybe even somebody just got tired of their character, their character got killed, they're trying to bring somebody new into it. What are some ways you can bring in this character that are, number one, not cheesy, not this guy shows up and has a P stamp on his forehead, so you have to take him in.
Now, we're just talking about introducing the new character, not trying to introduce the new person, the player.
Right, I'm not getting into that.
Somehow integrate him to the plot. You could do, there's a lot of like cheesy old cliches you could do where you bust into the enemy hideout and this guy's a prisoner chained to the wall.
Must be a friend.
They did that in Conan.
Yeah, and I think the problem with that is if you're running a game that's got a lot of depth to it, what you have just created is now there's one person in the party who has really no good deep link to the party.
Right.
And so the first place I would start is I'd say, look, pull the group template back out, whether it's on paper or just in your heads, and try to integrate them that way. Mm-hmm. What's someone you could bring in that either would fit in well with the group, or maybe even someone that already is in there, that if you look in a background that, hey, this guy's got a brother who's like this.
Yeah. Relatives are always good.
Play his brother.
Yeah.
But play something that is integrated to the group, because like you said, if you just stick in a guy who's chained to the wall, you suddenly have, ideally, this tight-knit group, or at least a group with a lot of history, even if they all hate each other. But here's this one outsider that's just kind of floating around, and it's going to be very hard to integrate that.
Yeah,
well.
And even in the foreground, not all characters are player characters. You probably have some established NPCs, and I know I've eyeballed NPCs in certain of the games I've played that I've liked more than my own character.
Mm-hmm.
So elevating one, stamping a P on an NPC is one thing you could do.
Right. Yeah, that's always good.
Everyone has to be cool with that, though.
Yeah.
GM and future NPC, PC alike.
Right. Yeah, the elevating NPCs, relatives are, like I said, always a good thing. Random people are bad things. That just random, you're walking down the road, and
this guy sees us, and he's like, I want in.
Or you go into the village and it's like you're going after the evil Lich, and then some guy runs up and says, the Lich killed my parents. Let's go kill the Lich. Well, once the Lich's dead, then it's like, you know, I really like you guys. I'll stick around. It's cheesy. It's corny.
Dude, it's Lich.
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 I've heard this debate back and forth for a while. I actually tried to look into it, and I'm sure somebody's going to send me an email correcting me on this, but as far as I could tell, it's not even a real word. That it doesn't actually, like,
what do you mean it's not a real
that
word?
It's like, it has something
you
to do with, like,
Lichs are real?
It's like a funeral structure or it's something
like
that.
The Monstrous Manual lied to me? Just a random collection of characters
well,
that
just,
bam
what
out?
I don't get is here's a word that, like I said, I think it has to do with a funeral structure or something like that. But it's never been really used to reference an undead, and yet people have such strong opinions about how it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole nother
tangent. Just really love my liches.
Okay.
I think it's a beautiful template.
Well, okay then.
Right. That's something else you got to be sure you're doing is that you're integrating the person moving forward. Because if you've written a campaign kind of along the lines that we've talked about, you have things where this guy's background is going to be an important part of the plot, or this guy's long lost father is going to pop up in a few games. Be sure you're doing the same thing with the new player, because if your game is about three of the four players, player number four is going to sense that. Mm-hmm. And player number four may be okay with that for a little while, but they're going to quickly feel excluded when they never have any chance to sit in the special chair. So I'd be sure you're integrating them going forward as well. What about equipment and XP and things like that? I would typically just catch the person up to where the party is, but some people would say it's not fair because the party's earned it. Maybe you should start this person back at least a little bit.
Yeah, then in combat situations where you need all that fancy gear and doodads, the one guy is sitting there looking at his bent, rusty dagger going, eh.
Yeah.
I actually have some very relevant experience with that. I joined a Star Wars game for the duration of this summer that was very well established. Many, many months, I think a couple of years, more or less the same group of people were playing it. They had earned their levels, so to speak, and I showed up as a newbie, and I think they were level 13 or 14 on average, and I got a level 6 character, which was higher than a newbie, but it was really all the GM could give me in good conscience without earning it, so to speak. And I picked a noble, a support class, so that I could sit behind and use some of my passive abilities, and that's what I did. I mean, I couldn't fight. It just wasn't in the cards. I was below everyone by a lot.
I'm with Chad on that one. I think even if it doesn't seem quote-unquote fair, you're leaving the person out. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
And even out of combat, you know, let's say going back to D&D, everyone's level 16, 17, and you're level 10. And it's like, well, you know, well, I'm going to go manage my keep. Well, I'm going to go work on my wizard tower. What are you doing? I look at my water skin and cry.
Back into my water skin because I can't afford new water.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a danger that you're leaving this person out and all you're doing. Because, once again, the point of a role-playing game is for everyone to sit around as friends and have fun. And if you're taking the ability of one person to have fun away from them, I mean, it's like going to a bowling alley and telling one of the guys in your group they can't bowl.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then why did he come to the bowling alley? You know, you've just taken something big away from him.
Yeah, pretty much you just watch the higher level characters do their thing.
Yeah. Some people of the older school of gaming thought, I think, have the conception that if you want to play a high level character, you really have to earn it with your own risking of it and crawling up the ladder. But I would just say start the newbie at the same level that everyone else is at so that he can actually play the damn game.
The super high-level game that I was in one time that I just walked in and just was sitting in for one session, it had been going on for years and years, and they had tons of NPCs and old character sheets and old characters and people who hadn't shown up or people who stopped playing, and the Game Master kept all this crap. And he just pulled one out at random as like some 56th level thing with writing on both sides, and every single line of the weapon slots was filled up, and then it was like all the spells written on the side. It was pretty disgusting, but
yeah,
you know, but he had, it's like, here you go. And I'm like, thanks.
Well, he did do that, right?
I think the important part of integrating any new character into the game is to just be sure to take some time to think it through, that you want to craft it in like a new branch onto a vine. You don't want to staple it on. Mm. Like you said, if you just, here's a guy in the prison who hates the same person you do, surely this is going to work. Well, great. And what happens when that guy's dead?
Yep.
You know, do these people have any common reason to like each other?
Well, what happens when they're sitting in the pub? Do they just talk about how much they hate this guy? Come on.
And what happens in the long run when the plot is centering around background elements and personality elements from person A, B, and C, and person D is just kind of like, I hate so-and-so. Can we go kill so-and-so again? Again?
Let's go back to his grave. I want to pee on it.
So I say, you know, go back to your group template and be sure this is a well-integrated character. But I think that's about it. Do you guys have anything else on this topic?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
Great. No. Then we will sign it out for here, and we will save long-distance gaming for the next episode, and we will catch you then.
No, we'll make promises.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.